Hi, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Ksuba's daf Tezayim. We left off Tez Vav Amid Beis at the new perek. Today we're going to begin the second perek of the Masechta. Today's shiur is sponsored by Dr. David Lander in honor of his wife and children. Also, Lili Nishmas, his mother, Golda Basimcha. We thank the Landerer family very much for their continued sponsorship of the shiur. So again, today we're going to start the second perek of the Masechta. The second perek of the Masechta is primarily concerned with the concept of Hapesha Asar. The concept of Apesha Asar, who Apesha Hitter, we've started seeing examples of this earlier in the Masechta, but this perek really, really hits hard on this concept. What is this concept? The concept is that if a person shares with us information that was not yet known, that we know only because of that person's taina, and then that person qualifies the statement that they made, then the person is going to be believed because they never had to disclose the information to us to begin with. For example, if you have a woman who nobody knew that she was married ever, she comes to us and says, I was married, but I'm divorced, she's going to be believed because she never had to say that she was married. Nobody knew she was married. So even though she offers herself to get married again to everybody by saying that she was married, by conceding that she was married, because the only reason we knew she was married was on account of her own taina, she's believed to qualify the taina and then say that now she's divorced. And we're going to believe her when she says that. Tosfos appears to say that this is a type of migo. That what's a migo? Migo is another concept that we've been discussing throughout the first parak. Migo, as we know, is the concept that we will believe somebody when they make a taina, because if they wanted to lie, they could have made even a better taina. In other words, this woman, if she wanted to remain mutter to marry anybody, she never had to concede that she was married at all previously. She simply could have kept her mouth shut. She should have gotten married to anybody who she wanted. She came and said that she was married, but she's divorced. Again, that's the concept of Apesh Asar, but it's related to the concept of Migo in that she had a better taina. In other words, she had a better approach. If she wanted a lie, she could have said nothing. She simply could have kept silent, and then she'd be mutter to marry whomever she wants. Generally speaking, when we say Apesh Asar, the qualification needs to come right away. In other words, the qualification needs to come right after the statement that would otherwise cause her problems. For example, the woman who says, I was married, but now I'm divorced. Or we're going to see in our Mishnah a situation where somebody says, this field belonged to your father, but I bought it from him. And nobody knew that the field belonged to the father. So in other words, that's another example of a pesha asar, because the guy never needed to say that the field belonged to the other person's father. Now that he claimed it belonged to the other person's father, he's also believed to say that he bought it from him, because he could have kept his mouth shut, he could have kept the field, nobody would have known anything. But the qualification has to come, betoch kedei dibur. The qualification has to be part of that initial amira. It has to be part of the initial taina. If first he says, the field belonged to your father, goes away for a week, then he comes back and says, oh, but I bought it from him, that's not a pesha usher, because now we have no way to be mitzaref the two parts of his taina. So that's going to be what most of the perek is about, and indeed what the second part of our Mishnah is about. The first part of the Mishnah is going to be about if you have a woman who is widowed or is getting divorced, and there's a machlokas as to what her ksuba should have been. Was she a besula when she got married? Was she a ba'ula when she got married? We're dealing with a case, obviously, where there is no ksuba present. Otherwise, you could just look at the ksuba and see what it says, see whether it says mana or masayim. But there is no ksuba, so we try to recreate via forensic evidence or evidence of what happened when they got married, whether the woman would have been a besula or a ba'ula. That is then going to connect with the machlokas that we've been seeing over the past week, the machlokes in between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua at the end of the first parak, as to whether a woman is believed with her taina, which is what Rabbi Gamliel says, or if a woman is not going to be believed with her taina, which is what Rabbi Yoshua says. And at the end of the Mishnah, we're going to see that Rabbi Yoshua is moda to the concept of apesha asar, that even Rabbi Yoshua, who ordinarily in the first parak, whenever the woman came with a taina, and the Rabbi Yeshua was the one who said, "Lo mi pianu chayin." We're not going to believe what the woman said. Over here in the concept, in the case of Apesha Asar, he is going to believe the person who comes with a taina of Apesha Asar. So most of today's daf, except for the few parts that are going to be talking about the indicators. That when a woman got married, she was a besula. Most of the daf is going to be talking about the concept of Apesha Asar, Rabbi Yeshua's hoda, Rabbi Yeshua's shita by Apesha Asar, and why Rabbi Yeshua would hold that this Pesha Asar is going to be believed, whereas all of the women in Perek Aleph were not believed. What's the difference between those two situations? So again, says the Mishnah, beginning at the bottom of Tezvavam Abayz, beginning of the second perek of Meseches Ksuba, says the Mishnah as follows: He isha shenes armala o shenes garsha. You have a woman who is widowed or is getting divorced, says Rashi, and she's being toveya her ksuba. She wants to collect her ksuba. He omeres besula nesesi. She claims that she was a besula when she got married, and therefore she deserves 200. Vu omer lo ki el almana nesasich. And he claims, no, you were an almana, and therefore I owe you only 100, and obviously we're dealing with a case where there is no ksuva, because if there was a ksuva, you could just look at it and see what it says. So there's a debate whether the husband owes the wife, the ex-wife, 200 or 100. Obviously, in the case where she's an almana, it's not he who's claiming that the ksuva is 100. Rather, it's the yarshim are claiming, no, the ksuva is 100, because when our father married you, you were already an almana, is what it means. Not that you're an almana now. Obviously, he's an almana now, but what it means is you were already an almana when you married our father. So, yesh edim, if there are edim, sheyatsa binuma, that she went out bihinuma, we're going to see what that is, the rosha parua, and that her hair was worn down, which is what the besulos do. When they go to the chuppah, their hair is down a little bit on their shoulder. And we're obviously talking about before Kiddushin and Nisuin, after the wedding. Sfaradim have different minhagim than Ashkenazim here, but after the wedding, a woman has to start covering her hair if she's married. But we're dealing with pre-wedding. She was wearing her hair in the way of the hairstyles of a besula, ksuvasa masayim. So if there's that sort of evidence, then her ksuva is going to be $200, because that's proof that she's a besula. And the Mefarshim explained, this is the case even if she didn't get married on Wednesday. Because you might be wondering, why do we have to have evidence as to whether she went out behinuma? We're going to see what that means. Or whether, what hairstyle she was wearing. Let's just check the wedding invitation and see when they got married. Why? Because the very first Mishnah in our Masechta said, Besula Nises Liyom Haravi. Every Besula has to get married on a Wednesday. An Almana could get married any day. The Besula, remember, had to get married on a Wednesday because Basin sits Monday and Thursday, and we have to make sure that he could go to Basin with a Taina that he didn't find Besulim, and she can't get married on Sunday because Shaktu Chachamim, that the Chachamim wanted to make sure that he prepared the wedding feast for 3 days. Great, so why don't we check the wedding invitation, see if they got married Wednesday? So the answer is, even if she didn't get married Wednesday, she could still be a Besula. Why? Because there were certain women who halachically have the status of a Besula, but they wouldn't have to get married on Wednesday because they're actually Bisulim, the actual simane bisula, are not going to be as strong. Two examples of this. One is a mukaseit, somebody who had an accident, and therefore physically she has no bisulim, but halachically she has the status of a bisula, and therefore her ksuba is going to be 200. We saw this big machlokas a couple of days ago. And the second situation is, we also alluded to a few days ago, is a bogeres. A bogeres is somebody who's more than 12 and a half years old. What we had said was, as she grows older, her simane besulim start to deteriorate a little bit. And therefore, if there's not going to be simane besulim anyway, she doesn't necessarily have to get married on a Wednesday. And therefore, whether she got married on a Wednesday is not going to be dispositive. So Tosfos over here also says that if you look in the first Tosfos in this perek, he says, B'delo nekita ksuva ayri. We're talking about a case where she doesn't have the ksuva, obviously. D'i k'ksuva nechse ksuvasa maya besulo almana. The obvious point that we've been making, if there is a besula, just refer to the ksuva. If there is a ksuva, rather, just refer to the ksuva and see whether the girl is a besula or not. See what the ksuva says. Even if we, ordinarily speaking, we say that if somebody says parati, that if somebody satisfied a maista based and he's believed, so Tosfos is bothered. Why doesn't the guy have a migu? The woman comes with a claim that she's a basula. The guy comes with a claim, no, you weren't a basula, you were an almana, and therefore I only owe you 100. Couldn't the guy have made a better taina? The guy could have said, I already paid your ksuba. I don't owe you anything. So the answer is, Tosfa says, this is a migu b'makom eidin. Because ksuva is a maisa basin, we have no evidence that he actually paid. We have edim now that the woman was a basula. Therefore, the guy is not going to be believed with his taina that she was an almana, because he could have claimed that he paid. He couldn't have claimed that he paid, because the payment scheme here is very... or the payment process is very structured because the ksuva is a maisa based in. Okay, so again, so far in the Mishnah, we've said if there's a dispute as to whether she was a pesula or a ba'ula or an almana when they got married, look at the evidence. Look to see whether there was hinuma. Look to see whether rosha parua. Rav Yochanan ben Broka is going to give a different indicator. Says the Mishnah four lines up from the bottom. Rav Yochanan ben Broka Amar af chila kloyos raya. Even chila kloyos, throwing wheat kernels is a raya. And Rashi says that they were rugil to throw. The kids used to throw wheat kernels like you see in the movies. Everybody's throwing rice at a wedding, so that's obviously not our minig, but they had a minig in the Zman HaGemara that they would throw wheat kernels when a besula got married, so that would also be a raya. Now, here's the part of the Mishnah where we transition to Pesha Asar, and it sort of comes out of left field. And the Gemara is going to struggle with what exactly does this part of the Mishnah have to do with anything, to be honest with you. Umode Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yeshua's mode, unclear what he's mode to, but he's mode, but omer lechavero, sadezu shalavicha yisav lekachtia amena. If a person says, this field that I'm living in, that I am working, this field that everybody thinks belongs to me, used to belong to your father, but I bought it from him, shu neman, that he's going to be believed, shapesha asar hu apesha hitter. Because the pesha asar, he was he who said initially that it belonged to the guy's father, therefore he's going to be believed to qualify his statement and say that now I bought it from you. Rashi says, because the guy never knew that the field belonged to his father to begin with. The only reason he knew the field belonged to his father, the only reason, let's use names, and it's easier. The only reason Reuven knew the field belonged to his father was because Shimon went to Reuven and said, oh, by the way, this field used to belong to your father Yaakov, but I bought it from him. Shimon could have kept quiet. He could have kept his field. Reuven would have been none the wiser. Reuven wouldn't have known anything. Because Shimon is the one who told Reuven that the field used to belong to his father, he's going to be believed to qualify the statement. That's the concept that we've been discussing of a pesh asar or a pesh eter. However, vim yesh edim shaya shalaviv, v'omer lekachtia mena eina neman. If there were edim that it used to belong to Reuven's father, and now Shimon comes and says, oh, I bought it, then he's not going to be believed. Why? Because this is not a case of a pesh asar. A pesha asar is only when the only reason he gets himself in trouble is because of his taina, and therefore he's believed to qualify his taina. Here, the reason we know that it belongs to the father is not because of Shimon's taina, it's because there were edim that it belonged to the father. So Shimon has no basis to be neman. He has no nemanas to say that he bought it unless he could bring a raya that he actually bought the field. There is a machlokas as to whether there is a case of a pesha asar. What if Reuven goes to Shimon and says, oh, by the way, this field is my father's. And Shimon says, you're right, it used to be your father's, but I bought it from him. Can we apply a pesha asar in that case? In other words, is the only case, it says over here in the Mishnah, Vimyesh Edim. If there were Edim that used to belong to Reuven's father, then Shimon is no longer believed with a tain of a pesha asar. What if there are no Edim, but Reuven comes and says, hey, that's my father's field. And Shimon says, yeah, it was your father's, but I bought it from him. It's not really a pesha asar because Reuven knows that it was the father's field already. We're going to see that's what the Gemara refers to. Shor shachot lefanecha. We'll explain what that is when we get up to it. Okay, so that's the Mishnah. We have the first part of the Mishnah that talks about indicators that the woman was a besula. Second part of the Mishnah, seemingly coming out of left field, starts talking about a pesha asar. All right, so let's hit the Gemara. Says the Gemara, three lines down, Tez Zayin Amid Aleph. Taima Dika Edim. The reason that the woman would be believed to collect the ksuva of 200 and actually that she was a besula is because there were edim that all of this stuff happened at her wedding that is symbolic of stuff that happens at a wedding of a besula. Haleka edim, but if there were no edim, then Baal Me'eman, then the husband would be believed and we would not rely on her chazaka de gufa. Remember, every woman has a chazaka when she's born up until she loses her besulim that she is a besula. But we're not going to rely on her chazaka. We're only going to give her the ksuv of 200 if she has edim. So lema tanan stama deloka Rabbi Gamliel. Let's say that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel, again, the shita that we've been seeing for the past week in the series of Mishnayis at the end of Perek Aleph. The Rabbi Gamliel, because if we held like Rabbi Gamliel, ha'mar I mehemna. Because Rabbi Gamliel had said that she is believed. In other words, and Rabbi Gamliel had said that we're going to believe the taina of the woman when she comes with a taina's bari, coupled with something else, either coupled with a migo, or coupled with a chazaka, or coupled with a rove. And over here she has a chazaka, because the chazaka is that she was a besula. She's coming with a taina's bari, saying, I was a besula. According to Rabbi Gamliel, l'chora, we should believe her, because we have a taina's bari plus a chazaka. We should believe her, even without the edus about what happened at her wedding. So says the Gemara, no, afilu tema Rav Gamliel. No, even if you want to say that this is like Rav Gamliel, ad kal no kam Rav Gamliel hasam, when does Rav Gamliel say in the first perek that the woman is believed, ela babari v'shema, that's only when she's coming with a tainas bari, and he's like, I don't know, he's coming with a tainas shema. Aval hacha babari yubari lo amar. But over here, it's not a case of bari v'shema, it's a case of bari yubari. She's saying definitively, I was a basula. He's saying definitively, no, you weren't. And in the first parak, all those mishnayis where Rabbi Gamliel is going to believe the woman, it's a case of bari v'shema. That's why we believe the woman, because she comes with a tainas bari, whereas the counterclaimant only has a tainas shema. Here, the counterclaimant also has a tainas bari, so Rabbi Gamliel is not going to believe her. Without edus, says the Gemara, this is a very obvious distinction, because we had literally spoken, remember the case in the Mishnah a couple of days ago, where we had literally compared the machlokas Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua to another machlokas Rav Huna and Rabbi Yehuda, where the guy says, you owe me $100, and the other guy says, I don't know, and we were specifically comparing it to a case of bari v'shema. So we know that machlokas is in a case of bari v'shema. Why would we think that this Mishnah has anything to do with that? So says the Gemara, the Karila, the person who asked the question, what were they thinking? Ha bari yubariu. Over here, this is a case of bari yubari, and it's very obvious that there is no basis to compare this Mishnah, therefore, with the Mishnayis at the end of the first parak. Says the Gemara, kivan derov nashim besulos nisos. No, I might think, because most women, when they get married when they're a besula. Therefore, kibari v'shema dami. It's not really like a bari ubari. Rather, it's like a bari v'shema. In other words, his taina that she wasn't a besula is not really such a super strong taina, because most women, when they got married, are besulos. Therefore, we might think that we're going to treat his taina like a taina shema. Kamash Maman, we're going to treat his taina like a taina's bari. So even Rav Gamliel is going to require edus in our Mishnah in order to establish that she was a besula. Vachinami mistabra, and this is also mistabra, midiktani imode Rabbi Yeshua. Because at the end of the Mishnah it says, umode Rabbi Yeshua, that Rabbi Yeshua agrees to something. Now, again, if in the beginning of the Mishnah, it's Rabbi Gamliel will agree that in this case, she requires Edim, even though all those Mishnahs in the first parak, we believe her Taina without Edim, then the disputant of Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua himself, is going to admit that we will believe a person when he comes with a Taina of a Pesha Asar. So then the Mishnah is very symmetric, because at the end of the Mishnah it says Moda Rabbi Yeshua. So now, says the Gemara, E Amrit Bishlama Ayri Rabbi Gamliel B'mode Shapir. If the first part of the Mishnah is a situation where Rabbi Gamliel is Moda to Rabbi Yeshua that you require Edim, then I understand why in the Seifa of the Mishnah it's Rabbi Yeshua being Moda to Rabbi Gamliel. Ele'i Amrit Lo Ayri Rabbi Gamliel B'mode. But if the first part of the Mishnah has nothing to do with the Shita of Rabbi Gamliel, in other words, if Rabbi Gamliel is not going to admit that we require Edim when the woman comes with a Tainas Bari, but he also comes with a Tainas Bari. In other words, Rabbi Gamliel is not Modet Rabbi Yeshua Shita at all. So Rabbi Yeshua Laman Modet. So who's Rabbi Yeshua Modet to? In other words, if we can explain the first part of the Mishnah, even according to the Shita of Rabbi Gamliel, then I understand, because in the first part of the Mishnah, we're explaining it even according to Rabbi Gamliel, and the second part of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yeshua is going to reciprocate and say, oh, Rabbi Gamliel, I sort of adopt your Shita by a case of Apesha Asar. But if the first part of our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Gamliel, then who is Rabbi Yeshua being moded to? Rabbi Yeshua is not being moded to anybody, because again, the disputants at Roe is Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel. Says the Gemara, Mi Savid Rabbi Yeshua, Hai Pirkin Koi, Amiku Koi, Vapirka Kama Koi. Rabbi Yeshua is not talking about our Mishnah at all. He's talking about Migu, and he's talking about the first Perek. In other words, all of those Mishnayis in the first Perek, where Rabbi Yeshua is going to believe the woman, and Rabbi Gamliel, is going to believe the woman, and Rabbi Yeshua says, Lomi Pia Yin Anu Chayin, we're not going to believe the woman. That's what he's going on. So now the Gemara is going to give us a great review. This is a great Chazorish here of all of those Mishnayis at the end of the first Perek. So says the Gemara, this all should be familiar to us because it was all over the past couple of days. So says the Gemara, Ahaya. So which case in the first Perek is Rabbi Yeshua referring to? Ilema Aha, if it's this case. Haisa muberes, if she was pregnant. V'yamra lamati v'shalu berzeh, and we say to her, what's the story with this baby that you're carrying? And she says, Mish ploni v'kohen, who is from so-and-so, and he's a kohen. In other words, he's a miyuchas, he's kosher. Rav Gamliel Rabbi Lazar omrim ne'menes. Rav Gamliel and Rabbi Lazar say that she's believed. Rav Yeshua omer lo mipianu chayin. And Rav Yeshua says, no, we're not going to believe her. So hasam, my migu, re kresa ben shinea. Over there, the reason that Rabbi Yeshua is not going to believe her is because there is no migu. In other words, what should she have said? What other taina could she have made? The best taina that she could have made is the one that she did make. Is that yes, she was nevelas to a kosher. She couldn't have been quiet. She couldn't have said I was never nevelas because she's pregnant. So therefore, there's no migu. So Rabbi Yeshua can't be going on that case. Ella aha, says the Gemara, it's going on another case in the first parak. Ru medaberes emechad. If they see her speaking to somebody, and you'll remember that medaberes, we had a big machlokas, what that meant. And the Gemara is going to get to that right away. V'yamrula, and they say to her, mativo shelizeh, what's the deal with a guy you were with? Ish ploni v'koinu, and she says, oh, it's so-and-so, and he's a kohen. Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Lazar, Omrim Nemenes. Rabbi Gamliel says that she's believed. Rabbi Yeshua, Omer Lomipionu Chayin. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, we're not going to believe her. Sahasam, my migu icha. Over there again, what migu is there? What migu is there? That depends on what medaberes means, says the Gemara. Hani chaliziri damar my medaberes nistera. I understand, according to Ziri, who said that medaberes means secluded, but it means that we saw them talking to each other, but it doesn't mean that we saw them actually being boel one another. Because if it means that we just saw them secluded, we just saw them in yichud with one another, migu di ba yamra lo nevalti, v'kamer nevalti mehemna. Because she could have said, I never had bia with this person, but she concedes that she had bia with this person, but he's kosher, she's going to be believed because she has a migu, she could have come with a better taina. The better taina would have been lo nevalti. But she says nevalti and he was kosher, therefore she's going to be believed. Ella the Ravasi, but according to Ravasi, demar mai medaberes neveles, who says that medaberes means neveles, meaning we have witnesses who saw them in the Maisa Bia. What could she say? My miguika. There is no migo. The best taina that she could have made is, oh yes, I had bia and he was a kosher. She couldn't have said I didn't have bia because there were witnesses that saw her having bia. So obviously, there's no migo over there. The Ella Aha, it's going on the following case. He omeres mukas eitz ani, where she claims that she's a mukas eitz, vu omer lo ki ela drusas ish at. And he claims, no, you're a drusas ish, in other words, you had relations with a man, and therefore, unlike a mukas eitz, where the ksuva is 200, we saw that's machlokas, that's going to rear its head again over here, but unlike a mukas eitz, where the ksuva is 200 pashab shat, he claims he owes her only 100 because she's a regular old ba'ula. So says the Gemara, Rav Gamliel, Rav Elazar, Omrim, Nemenes. Rav Gamliel and Rav Elazar said in that Mishnah that she's believed, to say that she's a Mukas Eitz. Rav Yeshua Amar Lo Mepiyon Echayin. Rav Yeshua says, no, we're not going to believe her. So also, my Migo Iko over there, what Migo is there? What better Taina could she have made than that she's a Mukas Eitz? Now, Bishlam Ala Rav Elazar, I understand according to the Sheet of Rav Elazar, to Amar B'mone V'lo Klom, that the woman claims she's entitled to a money because a mukaseis is only entitled to a ksuv of a money. And the guy claims that she's not entitled to anything. Why wouldn't she be entitled to anything if she's a ba'ula? Ba'ula is entitled to 100 because the guy's claiming a mekach tos. The guy claims that I thought you were a basula. It turns out you're a ba'ula, therefore you're not entitled to anything. So I understand if she's coming with a taina that you owe me 100. He's coming with a taina, no, I owe you nothing. Diboy amrat mukas eis ani tachtecha visli masayim. She could have said, I'm a mukas eis. But I became a mukas eitz after we were engaged, after you already gave me kedushin. When you gave me kedushin, I was a basula, therefore you owe me 200. So she could have claimed a ksuba of 200, but she's only came in a ksuba of 100. Good, now she has a migu. V'kamrit meikara, d'les le'elamane, but she's claiming that she was a mukas eitz even before kedushin, and therefore she's entitled to a ksuba of a mane. Mehemna, she is going to be believed. Because in other words, she has a taina mula. She had a migu. Because she's only claiming 100. She could have claimed 200. Therefore, when she claims 100, we're going to believe her. But according to Rav Yochanan, who says that when she comes with a taina of mukas eitz, even if the accident happened before kedushin, she's claiming 200. And when the guy says, no, ki ela drusas ish at, that you were a Ba'ula, he's claiming, he's conceding that he owes her 100. Says the Gemara, my migu ika, what migu is there? Why would we believe her? She's already making the best taina that she could, because she's already making a taina that entitles her to 200. There is no more than 200 in the ksuva, so she's already levying the best taina that she ever could. Ella aha, we're talking about the following case in the first perek. If a person marries a woman and doesn't find besulim, she says, guess what? When you were mekadesh me, when you gave me kedushin, I was a besula, but after that I was raped, and therefore it was your field that was flooded. In other words, it's your bad mazel that this happened to me. And he says, lo, no, it happened before we were engaged, and therefore I don't owe you 200. So Rav Gamliel and Rabbi Lazar omrim nemenes. Rav Gamliel and Rabbi Lazar say that she's believed. Rabbi Shua omr lo mepionechai, and Rabbi Shua says, no, we're not going to believe her. To migu dibi amrat mukas eitz ani tachtecha, because it's a migu that she could have said, I was a mukas eitz while after I was engaged. In other words, she concedes that she was raped after she was engaged. She could have said that she was a mukas eitz after she was engaged, and that's why she doesn't have a besulim. And what's the benefit of saying that she's a mukas eitz? Why is that a taina meula? Why is that a better taina if she says she's a mukas eitz? Because if she's a mukas eitz, she's not going to be usher to a kohen. If she was nansa, if she was raped, she's going to be usher to a kohen. So therefore, if a kamra nanasti de kapasla nafshe mekuhuna, she could have come with a better taina. She could have said mukas eitz where she's not usher to a kohen. Instead, she comes and she concedes that she was actually nansa, and now she is usher to a kohen. That's why Rav Gamliel says that she's believed, because she comes with a migo. She could have had a better taina. She's not making the better taina. Therefore, we're going to believe her. The Kamar Rabbi Yeshua, the Rav Gamliel, and Rabbi Yeshua says to Rav Gamliel, "Bahai migu da'acha modina lach." This migo over here in this perek, where the guy goes, where Shimon goes over to Reuven and says, "This field used to belong to your father, but I bought it." That he's going to be believed. In other words, the Gemara here is even calling it a migu. Really, it means a pesha asar. But again, the better taina is, he could have kept his mouth shut and he didn't have to say anything, but he did, and therefore we're going to believe him. So in this Mishnah, Rabbi Yeshua is going to be modeh to the concept, to the strength of a claim of migo. However, bahu migu da'asam paligni lavech. But over there, in that migo, I argue on you. In other words, in the first parak, Rabbi Yeshua is going to say, we're not going to believe the woman when she says, Mishe Rastani Nenasti, that she got raped after she was engaged, because of a migo that she could have said she's a mukas eitz. He doesn't hold from that migo. Says the Gemara, Michti, Hai migo v'hai migo, Maishna hai migo v'hai migo. They're both migo. In other words, the concept of migo is, we should believe somebody whenever they could have made a better taina but didn't. We should believe them with a taina that they make. So what difference does it make whether it has to do with a field or whether it has to do with the physical status of a woman and what happened to her? What difference does it make whether it's in the first parak of the Masechta or the second parak of the Masechta? If he holds from Migo, he should hold from Migo. What's the problem here? So says the Gemara, Hacha ein shar shachot lefanecha. Hasam hare shar shachot lefanecha. Ah, it's a much stronger migo over here than over there. What does it mean, shar shachot lefanecha? So let's see Rashi inside, because I think that this is like an example of like a popular phrase that loses a little bit of translation. First of all, actually, we probably don't have to say it inside because I want to finish the daf. But shar shachot lefanecha means that there's literally, it means that there's a dead ox in front of us. What does it mean that there's a dead ox in front of us? Over here in our case in the Mishnah, the guy didn't have to say a word because he's dealing with a field, he owns the field, everybody thinks he owns the field. Shimon didn't have to say anything to Reuven at all. Reuven never would have known that the field belonged to his father. He didn't have to make any taina. He wasn't forced into making any taina. Once he makes a taina and says that the field used to belong to your father, which was totally gratuitous because he never had to say it, then he's going to be believed to qualify and say, oh, but I bought it from him. In the first perek, though, could the woman have gotten away without making any taina? No, because there's a wedding night. After the wedding night, they have bia.
on the wedding night, they abia. After they abia, he's going to go to Basin with the mappa and say, Lamatsasi besulim. She's going to have to explain it. In other words, could she have come with a better taina that she was a mukas eitz? Sure, she could have come with a better. Could she have afforded to remain quiet? No, because hare shor shachot lefanecha. Because, in other words, she was forced into the taina. So over here, it's a qualitatively better migo because he literally didn't have to say anything. But he put himself at risk. Therefore, he's believed to qualify his words. Over there in the first perek, she didn't have the option to not say anything. Therefore, it's not a strong migo. Says the Gemara now Vayter. So four lines up. So Vakivan the Rob Nushan Basulas Nisos. So let's back up. So in the first part, so basically now we've understood, hopefully, if we follow this discussion, what it means at the end of the Mishnah when it says Rabbi Shua's Modet Rav Gamliel, because in this case he believes in the Migo, even though in the first parak he doesn't open the Migo. Great. Next discussion. Kivan the Rob Nushan Basulas Nisos. Since Rov Nushan get married when they're Basulas, Kiloasu Edim Mai Have. Why do we require Edim that she was a Basula? Even if Edim don't come, you have a Rove, and the Rove says that he owes her 200. Says the Gemara, Amaravina Misham the Ikalamema, Rove Nushan Basulas Nisos, because you could say, yes, there is a Rove that most women when they get married are Basulas, Umiyot Almanos, and a miut of women who get married are almanos. B'cholanis is besula yeshla kol. And whenever a besula gets married, there's a big celebration. There's everybody knows about it. Turning to Tesayin Amabez, v'zuhol vein la kol. And this woman, because there was no kol, there was no big tararam when she got married, itrale ruba, the rove is subverted, and therefore it's undermined, and therefore we can't follow the rove. Says the Gemara, well, this is even worse than not following the Rov. E kol anisos besula yesh la kol. If every single time the besula gets married, there was a kol, and when this woman got married, there was no kol, so kielso edem mai have. So if edem then come and say, oh, she got married when she was a besula because she had a numa, a rosha, parua, why are those edem believed to say that she was actually a besula? If every woman who's a besula gets married has a kol, hanach sade shakri ninu. These edem are liars. Ela amar Ravina, no. Rov anisos besula yesh la kol. Most of the time when women get married and they're a besula, there is a kol. Bezu, hol vein la kol, itzrale ruba. And this one, because there was no kol, the rove is undermined. However, if there are edim, then we believe that she's a basula, and we can believe that she's a basula because she's part of the miyot that was ein la kol, and that's why we're going to rely on the edim. Okay, says the Gemara Vayter, Yesh edim sheyasa binuma, if there was edim that she went out binuma. Says the Gemara, so why do we let her collect 200 on the basis of edim? V'leichash dilma mafke edim b'hai beidina, maybe she's going to collect 200 based on the edus in this basin. V'gavev adar mafke la b'ksuva b'hai beidina, and then she's actually going to pull out the ksuva, which it turns out she really had the whole time. She's going to go to another basin, present the ksuva, and then say, hey, you owe me another $200. V'gavi bein, she's going to double collect. Because first she's going to pretend that the ksuva doesn't exist. She's going to use the edim. Then she's actually going to take the physical ksuva to another basin and go collect again. Samer of avos, el sameres kos ven shover. No, because we force the wife to write a receipt. To write a receipt in respect of the payment. In other words, whenever somebody makes a payment pursuant to a shtar, we force the person who's receiving the payment, we force the creditor to write a receipt to make sure that you can't double collect. So the question in the Gemara is, why aren't we afraid that she's going to double collect? The answer is she can't, because she has to write a receipt saying that the husband paid already, and the husband's going to have that receipt, and therefore he could go to Basin and show that he already paid. Rav Papa says, no, we don't have to be talking about a case of Kosfin Shovar, because it's a machlokas, whether you write a Shovar or not, whether you write a receipt. We're dealing with a case where they don't write a Ksuva. V'ikah demasnit la abraisa, and some say that we're talking about the braisa. If the ksuva got lost, etmina ksuvasa, she hid the ksuva. Nisra ksuvasa, the ksuva got burnt. Raktu lefanea. However, they danced in front of her at her wedding. Sichaku lefanea, they sported, they did all the wedding shtick by ketsa maraktim in front of her. Hevir lefanea koshal besora, they passed before her a koshal besora. We'll see what that means. O mapa shal besulim, or all of the stuff that they would symbolically do at weddings to show that the woman was a besula. And yeshla edem be'echa mikol elu, if there are edem that any of this happened at the wedding, ksuvasa masayim, she gets a ksuva of 200. Why are we afraid that she's going to collect once with Edim, and then she's going to collect again with the Ksuva? So Amar Rav Avo, Zos Amares, Kos Fin Shover. So Rav Avo said, no, because we write a...
because we write a shover. Tosfa says that this has nothing to do with a borrower and a lender. In other words, nothing to do with Eved Lova Lish Malveh. And because Eved Lova Lish Malveh, we're going to force the Loveh to write a shover when he pays back. This is any time there is any sort of Balchov situation, anytime there's any shtar, we require the payee to write a shover, to write a receipt. So therefore, since we write a receipt, there's no fear of double collecting. Rapapa says that it's a case where they don't write a ksuba, and therefore we're not afraid that she's going to collect in another beis din with her ksuba. Says the Gemara, how can you say that this is a place where they don't write a ksuba? What was the case in the Braisa? Case in the Braisa was, she lost her ksuba. If the case in the Braisa was, she lost her ksuba, she hid her ksuba, how can you say it's a place where they don't write a ksuba? But if the ksuba saktani, the cause of la ihi. No, it's a place where generally they don't write a ksuba. He happened to have written a ksuba. Okay, but if he wrote a ksuba, sof sof mafkale v'gavye bay, so why aren't we afraid that he's going to double collect? We should be afraid of this. Says the Gemara, my ivda ivda ba'ar. Because ivda lost doesn't mean that she lost it, she physically misplaced it. It means that it was destroyed in a fire. So there's no concern that she's then going to go to Beis Din again and collect with the ksuva after having collected from Edim. Iachi hainu nisrafa. Wait, but then if ivda means ivda ba'ar, if lost means it was lost to fire, another case in the Braisa is nisrafa ksuvasa, that it was burnt. So what's the difference between burnt and lost to fire? Va'od hitmina ma'ikalameimar. And there's also a case of hitmina that she hid it. Hid it doesn't mean hit it with a fire. Vesu ivda lamali. And why do we even have a case of ivda? Ella kol ivda ki etmina befaneinu dami. Any case where the ksuva's lost, it's as if she hid it in front of us. And we will not let her collect unless she has edim that says nisrafa ksuvasa. In other words, the reason that we let her collect is not because she writes a shover and therefore we're not afraid of double collecting. The only reason we let her collect from Edim is because we know she is already certified that there is no ksuva, so we're not afraid of double collecting. The one who has the soul shakal vatari on the Braisa certainly is going to say that, certainly is going to explain our Mishnah that way. However, according to the Mandi Amar who had this whole conversation on the Mishnah, is not going to have the same conversation on the Braisa. Why? Because the Braisa was the place where we explicitly said, if the ksubasa, if minu ksubasa, nisfra ksubasa, that was like a real kvetched out terrace. No, we're talking about a case where they don't write a ksuba, and ivda means it was, he happened to have written the ksuba, but ivda means it was lost to fire. That's very duchuk, and we don't want to rely on shenuya dechuka, and therefore, the one who has the soul shaklavataria on the Mishnah is not going to have it on the Braisa as well. Says the Gemara, emyesh edim. So if there were edim, she's able to collect 200. So says the Gemara, why aren't we afraid that the woman's going to trot these edim out to multiple batei din and double, triple collect the ksuba? Says the Gemara, b'makom lo efshar vade kasvin and shover, because even according to the Mandi Amar, who says, ordinarily speaking, we don't force the payee to write a shover. Where we're legitimately afraid of fraud, we do force the payee to write a shover. Therefore, the woman is not going to be able to be paid more than once. They passed before her a koshal besora. That's one of the indicators that she's a besula. My koshal besura. What's koshal besura? Amar avada barahava kos yayin shal truma mavirin lefanea. They would pass a kos yayin of truma in front of her. That this woman is now roi to eat truma. In other words, if she's marrying to a kohen, then it shows that she's a basula, she was not mezaneh, therefore she's going to be fit to eat truma. The only two types of women are not basulos and those who are mezana. There's also an almana who had a legitimate relationship with a husband, she's a ba'ula, yet she's able to eat truma. So the fact that she's able to eat truma doesn't mean necessarily that she was a basula. Elamara papa, zu racious, katrumas racious. The symbolism is that this woman is a racious, he will be her first, just like truma is the first part of the crop taken.
Tanya, Rav Yehuda, Omer, Chavish, Shal Yayim, Avirin Lefanei, it wasn't a kos, but it was a barrel of wine. Amar Avada, Barahava, Besulam, Avirin Lefanei, Stuma, Bulam, Avirin Lefanei, Psucha. They would pass this barrel of wine in front of the woman. If she was a Besula, they would pass a closed barrel of wine. If she was a Beula, they would pass an open barrel of wine. It says that to symbolize that she's her, physically, she's either open or closed. So it says the Gemara, Amai never Kamei Besula, Vakamei Beula, Lo never Klal. So why don't we pass the barrel of wine in front of the Besula, but in front of the Beula, don't do anything. Why do we have to do the open barrel of wine? Because Zimna the Tufsa Masayim, sometimes she's going to claim that she's owed 200, Vyamra Ana Besula Avoy, and she's going to claim, no, I am a Besula, but the reason that they didn't pass the barrel of wine in front of me, Vahidlo Avru Kamai, Asnusa Yudas Nisu, and the reason that we didn't pass the barrel in front of me is because they got too hammered at the wedding to remember to do this symbol. So therefore, we make sure that they pass the barrel in front of everybody. The Besula will have a closed barrel passed in front of her. The Beula will have an open barrel passed in front of her. So we'll stop here. We'll pick up Tanu Rabbanan, two lines up from the bottom, tomorrow, God willing. Everybody have a great day and a great Shabbos.